And now, The Low Post.
Welcome to The Low Post podcast, where we are recording this 55-0 minutes after the trade deadline in the NBA has passed. We had some surprises. We had some good times. We had some bad times, some laughter, some tears, the whole deal. And to help us sort through it, instant reaction, Mr. Bobby Marks, how are you?
Hello, Zach. How are you?
I'm good, man. This is my fifth cup of coffee today.
You know, a year ago, we were sitting across each other because I think we were talking about if the Lakers were still going to make the playoffs after the whole AD debacle. That was a year ago.
Yeah. How things have changed.
They certainly have.
Yes. And so I'm highly caffeinated and ready to go. Let's start with the biggest trade of the day, which was a deal that I didn't think it would happen. I thought they were too far apart, and it would be the kind of thing where they talked and talked, back away, and then the buzzer sounds. And that's the Warriors trading D'Angelo Russell to the Minnesota Timberwolves for Andrew Wiggins, the Wolves' 2021 first-round pick, protected for selections 1 to 3, meaning if it's 4 or lower, the Warriors get it. And then if it's 1 to 3, it flips to unprotected 2022. And then I believe a second round pick from the Timberwolves as well. That is a doozy, baby. I think this is a really fascinating trade. Obviously Minnesota has lusted after D'Angelo Russell. Karl Towns has been pouting. Karl Towns hasn't won a basketball game.
November, right? November 27th. Is that the
date? I understand he was injured for a good chunk. And you know what happened when he got injured? Timberwolves played good defense. Yeah. Not a coincidence. I think this is a fascinating trade. So you have two contracts that match up almost exactly. D'Angelo Russell and Andrew Wiggins, years, money, it's almost exactly the same. It's a complete wash. And so you have the Warriors, for just flipping those players, acquiring a draft pick that has a chance to be the single best acquired draft asset in the whole NBA for the next couple of years, plus a second-round pick. So that first-round pick tells you the Warriors, the league at large thinks D'Angelo Russell is that amount better than Andrew Wiggins. What are your initial thoughts on that?
Well, the initial thoughts were, you know, especially when this, you know, started percolating, I guess, a couple days ago, is that, you know, Wiggins, you had to entice the Warriors with something of value, right? Something good, not a top 14 protected first or, you know, something like that.
I think they wanted the Wolves 2020 pick unprotected. I think that was a subject of some haggling. They didn't get that. Obviously.
And you know what? And although you're probably not talking to the wrong person regarding unprotected first.
I think the statute of limitations on the self-deprecating jokes is over.
We're past 5 years, right? I would have probably been more inclined to do that compared to 2021. Just talking to our draft guys, you know, this draft's not too great here, you know, as far as even in the top 5 or 6 where 2021 could be pretty strong if it's the fifth pick in a draft or the sixth pick in a draft. So I think there's like three different components for me how I'm looking at it. The value of the pick coming back, right? That's going to be a good pick.
Potentially. I mean, the Wolves now have Russell and Towns, which is a recipe for a bottom 10 defense.
Yep.
Jared Culver, Okogie's all right. They traded the rest of their team. So their supporting cast is like a big giant question mark. They'll draft somebody. So like the Wolves, the West ain't getting any worse. The West isn't getting any worse, and next year I don't know how. You know, we'll see.
You're right. I mean, especially if even if they keep the pick, it goes unprotected. I mean, then we're talking unprotected again. Second component, finances, right? They go into Golden State goes under the luxury tax. I know that was important to them. They get out of the repeater tax next year, so that tax bill, which was 80, probably would be like 50. So there's like a $30 million savings, and of course the third component, the Wiggins component. Right. This is his fifth head coach in 6 years. And as I said, if it's not going to work in Golden State, it's not going to work anywhere. So, you get him for four years. You're married to him. You know, as I said, the Calvary is coming back with, Curry, Thompson. You'll have a top six pick. So, basically the decision for Golden State was, do we do it now? Right. Or do we wait until the June or July and wait for a disgruntled player like maybe Bradley Beal to be unhappy and maybe Russell in a pick does that for us. And they decided to do it now.
Because they still have their own pick, which could be the number one pick in the draft.
You're right.
The Warriors.
Yep.
So I, as is fitting, I think, for two big contracts of this size and players who are you know, I mean, D'Angelo Russell made the All-Star team last year as an injury replacement in the East, which is like 0.5 of an All-Star appearance in the West. My reaction was, I don't love this trade for either team. I actually think I dislike it a little bit less for Golden State. I just don't think D'Angelo Russell has a lot of trade value. I know D'Angelo Russell doesn't have a lot of trade value. I think they got maybe one other hard offer for him that was not close to this. If you look around the league, depending on who you classify guys like Doncic and Harden and LeBron, he's not close to a top 10 point guard in the NBA. And even if you eliminate those guys, it's maybe not there. And then you look at some of the guys that are coming that are younger than him, I don't think it's a lock that he's ever one of the top 8 to 10 point guards in the NBA. And I just don't think, like, you can say, wait till the summer, wait till next season. Like, someone will miss out on a point guard, blah, blah, blah. Like, that contract, he'll have value. I don't think he was ever going to have a lot of trade value. Now, he's been better this year, but his defense is so bad. His offense has gotten a little more, like, I think he's an underrated passer, D'Angelo. I think he's a good passer. He's gotten to the line 4 times a game this year, which is by far career high. That's the big bugaboo with him, right? He doesn't get to the rim. He's not explosive. He doesn't draw fouls. So he's improved a little bit on that. But you just are going to get so many long twos and so many inefficient shots. And he makes it an okay clip, but, like, it adds up to offense. In Brooklyn, when he made the All-Star team, they had the 19th best offense in the NBA. It's the offense. And so I think they face two choices. Wait. Because I do think he has just enough trade value that you could get off that contract in 6 months or a year without taking a bad one back. But you're not going to get a good draft asset and you're not going to get a good player. I think you could just make like a meh trade, just meh. And they made a choice. We want the draft pick because we think we can redeem Wiggins enough that that draft pick is worth it. And I actually don't mind that calculus for the Warriors.
Well, and I think if you wait, and, you know, I've had people say, well, that deal was going to be there in June. I don't know if that deal would have been in June.
So, like, let's say you get the 20th pick in some X draft and a crappy player. Is that better than this? Maybe it is. Maybe Wiggins becomes so unmovable and that contract is so bad. He's worse than D'Angelo Russell. Maybe it is, but I don't mind it. And what I think the downside is just as severe for Minnesota.
Yeah, and I think if you wait, you're looking at splitting up what's coming back. So it's like Rudy Gay from 6 years ago when Toronto traded him, right? You're getting like three guys back, right? So that $27 or $28 million contract, you're getting a couple $12 million rotation guys, and maybe you get a pick that's in the 20s. So here's your opportunity. We know this is going to be a good pick, right? I mean, this is, unless something really happens drastically over the next 2 years, this is going to be probably a top 5 or 6 pick.
I mean, I just don't think D'Angelo Russell has, I think there's a disconnect between, he's one of the biggest disconnects between what fans, I think of him and what people in the league think of him. Like, a lot of fans see 23 points a game and this and that. I don't think he's really highly regarded in the league at all. That said, Wiggins has been awful since the first 10 games of the season. He's been awful for almost all of his career. This idea that he's going to go to Golden State and become Iguodala, because Iguodala was another guy who couldn't shoot very well. Iguodala is a freaking genius. Iguodala sees stuff on the floor that 7 guys in the NBA see, and he sees it before everybody else. Andrew Wiggins is a good off-ball cutter. He doesn't see... He's not a genius. Let's put it that way.
He's an enigma.
He's not even an enigma. He's just not very good. Like, and defensively, he looks the part and does not affect winning hardly at all. So it could be that just becomes an albatross. They can't move. That is possible. However, that pick is good. He at least has a chance to be an okay defensive player. I don't think D'Angelo Russell has a chance to be an okay defensive player. Wiggins has hit 40% of his threes from the corner for his career. That's a good number. Like, those are shots he's going to have to take. How he fits with Draymond, I don't know. To me, he's a better fit with Steph and Clay than D'Angelo Russell is, particularly because of the defense. D'Angelo Russell is a hybrid guard. He's best. Your offense with him running 60 pick and rolls a game has a hard ceiling. Your offense with him running 25 and then coming off flare screens and we're moving off the ball like he did at Ohio State, like he did with the Lakers, now you got something. The problem is, who else has the ball while he's doing all that? And if it's a regular traditional point guard with all the defensive limitations of a regular traditional point guard, I don't know how you build a good defense.
Well, and they don't have a traditional point guard, right, in Minnesota?
No, so that's going to be. Now, maybe they run some of the offense through Towns at the elbow, so he runs around off flare screens and all that, but we'll see.
No, you're right. I mean, I think, you know, with both guys, right, you know, besides Russell getting to the playoffs last year, what do they have, two playoff appearances to show between both of them combined? So it's not like they've been in programs that have really good structure here. So I would probably bet on Wiggins, which is a stretch, before I bet on Russell right now.
I think this deal has a chance to fail for everybody. I think Golden State is getting beat up for it, and I don't think they deserve it. I think their calculus was okay. Now, I guess you could argue from Minnesota's perspective, it can't fail if the only thing you care about is Karl Anthony Towns being happy and keeping Karl Anthony Towns, right?
That's right. I mean, if you're haggling over pick protection and you have an opportunity to get D'Angelo Russell and placate Karl Anthony Towns, sometimes you do what's best for your franchise player, but this could come back and haunt them.
I mean, well, Towns and Russell running a pick and roll is going to be powerful. D'Angelo Russell is a good pull-up three-point shooter. He's a good passer. Playing with a big man who can take a lot of the load for him. He didn't have that in Brooklyn. He just had a roller, right? That's going to be healthy for him. I think it'll steer his offense to an optimal point of efficiency. So offensively, I think they have a chance to be good. But then you look at their supporting cast. Like, I mean, it's who's left? James Johnson just came in. Covington's gone. Culver, I think, has a chance. Lehman, who's been injured most of the year, has a chance. Okogie's a good defensive player who has not proven he can shoot. Bates Diop is gone. Naz Reid. I mean, this is what happens when you miss on the draft for like 10 straight years in a row. There's just nothing there other than those two guys. And Culver, I think, will be all right.
Yeah, you start spinning the wheels, right? You miss on a draft. You start trading for players. I mean, you've got Beasley and Hernan Gomez too, who are restricted free agents.
Oh, I forgot. Yeah. That seems like it happened 4 days ago. So, Malik Beasley will help their team. I actually think it's ironic. Minnesota, I think, took advantage of Houston being obsessed with one player, Robert Covington, and got a lot of stuff for him. Two picks, and one of which they flipped for the Denver guys. And they were victimized, might be a little strong, but the Warriors got everything they were going to get because of Minnesota's obsession with one particular player, D'Angelo Russell.
No, you're right. I mean, and they got two guys from Atlanta who are in nothing, right? Allen Crabbe and Evan Turner. So, I mean, it's a mixed bag of guys on that, and you know, let's face it. I mean, Minnesota's not a destination, so you better hit on these draft picks. And it's been, you know, it's a mixed bag.
Pelton gave it an A minus for Minnesota and a C for the Warriors. I kind of just feel like it's like a C. Just
for
an
everyone.
Overall C.
Yeah,
for
C everybody. For everyone.
I am interested to see Wiggins in Minnesota, or in Golden State. Because this idea that they're just the place you go to be redeemed and saved, like, I don't know where that came from, really. Like, maybe he'll do fine there, but I don't know that they can teach him to feel the game at a more sophisticated level. Maybe they can get him to defend harder. The interesting thing is he is going to a place that has welcomed open mid-range jumpers, which he has been dissuaded from taking this year. And it sounds like it's a cool like analytics thing, like, oh, we taught Andrew Wiggins not to shoot long twos. Like, it hasn't really helped him that much. So it'll be interesting to see what Golden State does with his shot selection.
Well, I think for the last 2 months left here, we've got 30 games. It's almost going to be, I don't want to say an open audition when you're married to a guy who has, you know, 3 years, $90 million plus. But it's going to be interesting because you'll get Curry back, right? You'll get him back probably by March, I would think. And you've got Draymond. So it's going to be your feeling out process. I think the interesting thing too is like, you know, kind of probably for another day is like you got six roster spots to go out and fill, right? I mean, it's to go out and can you go out and get guys like how Miami's been able to do it, right? The Kendrick Nunns, the Duncan Robinsons, can you go into the dive into the G League and find these type of players here, because those guys are going to probably, you're probably going to need them next year, because let's face it, your payroll is $150 million, $155 million.
And they got a couple of seconds, I think, for their Alec Burks, Glenn Robinson III.
Yeah, three.
3 seconds. Yeah. They weren't getting anything better for those guys. So you're right, their team has been upended. I mean, they don't really have hardly the team that they started off the season with, let alone the injuries to Steph and Clay and losing KD and all of that. This is one of those ones where it's like, it's going to take a while for me to just get accustomed to what in the hell is going on here on all of these teams. But I'm just a little lower on Russell, I think, than most people. And I just don't buy into the idea that he's a star. I don't buy that Minnesota has hit a home run here. I don't, and that Golden State has made a colossal mistake. I don't see it that way. And a lot of it will depend on that pick. But I think Golden State looked around and said, look, we could wait and not take back an albatross. And maybe that's all that matters, is that if Wiggins busts, they're stuck. And that's a severe downside. You know, we'll see if he busts or not, but they got a really good quality pick, and I don't think there was any other way for them to do that.
And I think if you wait too, and let's say you didn't do anything this offseason, you wait and you get Clay and Steph back and you got Russell, and you'd be like, well, wait a minute, this doesn't work. Right? I mean, this is, and then you're not getting back what you were able to get in this Minnesota deal.
What a day. What a day. Minnesota active. You can't say they're active. They're who's the name in that 12 player deal for you? There's always one guy.
I got it.
Who's your guy?
Jared Vanderbilt.
Ooh, that's not my guy. Tell me why. Sell me.
I tell you what, he came into the league at a broken foot, kind of a redshirt year. Just watching him in the G League. He spent a lot of time. He's been a local in the G League. And being out in Vegas watching the G League showcase, it's like who is this guy, right? I get it. It's not NBA competition stuff, but I think he's that one guy that can really mold into, I don't want to say like a Jeremy Grant type player, but he's got really good size. He's athletic. He's young. That's the guy. Like I was like, I hope he's not just a throw in here, and I don't think he is. They Minnesota likes him. Denver likes Kade Bates-Diop, so they kind of figuring that it's a swap for a swap. But that's kind of my out of the 12 guys. And it's funny, Zach. It's 12 guys, but like how many impact guys out of that deal? Like,
yeah, it's the kind of deal where it happens. Oh my god! Look at the tweets and the names. You're like,
You get to like, you know, Shabazz Napier and
my guy is Bates-Diop.
Yeah,
that's the guy that I'm looking at is. Maybe in 3 years, like, how did Denver get him again? He's not bad. He's big. He can really cut. He's a good cutter. He's a good rebounder when he goes to the basket. He can defend a lot of positions. If he can knock down enough open threes, he's a nice small ball four switchable bench guy. If he can't, then he's just not much. But he's, I think, 33% from deep this year. They've given him a green light in Minnesota. His interest in that green light wanes and waxes. But he's the one I'm keeping my eye on. Well, let's talk about that trade. The Rockets, to my knowledge, unless you count Bruno Caboclo, who is now still 2 years away from being 2 years away.
We thought he turned a corner last year, didn't we?
He has moments where he looks like a legit NBA player, and then he has moments where he's just sort of flying around and you're like, what just, oh, the ball just hit the side of the backboard and everyone fell down like bowling pins. Like, what's going on here?
Yeah.
They did not yet pick up a center. That doesn't mean that they're not going to. They appear to be going all in on super duper duper small ball. What are your thoughts, Mr. Marks?
Well, a couple thoughts here. One, Daryl Morey is never content with his roster, right? That's my, I feel like it's like shaking up the system every, you know, like if you're going to go to Houston, you better rent, man, unless you're Harden or Westbrook. I mean, that's the reality. And God forsake, if Eric Gordon didn't have a trade restriction on his contract, I mean, you know, who knows if his name would have been dangled upon here as far as there.
He has not shot it well
no.
in a while now.
No. my thought is that I like Robert Covington. He's got a great contract. I'm a little nervous about his knee because he missed, you know, 45 games last year. I think that's a little bit of a thing to watch going forward. This is going to be a trial. I mean, it's a trial and error as far as this, right? The small ball work. I mean, that's going to be the big question here because you're probably going to have, I guess you play Tucker at the five or you play Covington at the five and it gives you different. I mean, that's
where we're going to see both of them.
That's what we're looking at. And, you know, I know there's advantages on the offensive side and you're dealing with mismatches, but I mean, you look at the Western Conference, right? I mean, right now it's Utah, Houston first round. So you get Gobert, Jokic, AD. So that is going to be, that's going to be the challenge for the Rockets and their depth of bigs. I mean, it's Tyson Chandler and Isaiah Hartenstein, right?
Hartenstein had a nice little stretch.
You probably put him ahead of Chandler on a depth chart.
I think this is really interesting. I don't think it's super small ball as much as it is. Daryl just wants to put the five best players he can play. And with trading Chris Paul for Russell Westbrook changed the entire fabric of their team in so many ways, one of which is they replaced a great shooter with a terrible one. And I just think Daryl doesn't think they can win with two bad shooters on the floor at the same time. And so if they could have found a stretch five who could play defense, I think they would have been fine, even though that's not small ball. I just think this is Covington can shoot and defend, and that this is their best shot at trying to strike lightning in a bottle here and not try to beat the Lakers and the Nuggets and the Clippers on their terms, but to create a new kind of terms of engagement that those teams may have to adjust to. The problem is they're 15th in defense and 22nd in defensive rebounding. I just don't see them defending well enough to win in the playoffs against those kinds of teams. I just don't see, they can switch, they could junk it up with double teams. And, you know, it's true, like teams are going to try to get, and I think Dallas, Denver, Lakers, Clippers, I think are all in the top seven in offensive rebounding in the NBA. And you can tell me, like, when they go to the boards and they don't get it, we're running, and we're running like hell. We're going to have shooters everywhere. That's cool. I don't see enough of a defensive upside here.
Well, especially when we get to the playoffs and this thing slows down a little bit, right? I mean, I could see a lot of possessions when that clock goes back to 14 multiple times. I mean, that's the reality of it when you have a smaller lineup. But, yeah, I mean, I think it's just going back to, like, how many more options do they have to kind of shake up the roster, right? I mean, basically, Capella was your big trade chip.
And you got a first.
And you got a first. And, first went out. They moved their own first to Denver, and then Mini got the Brooklyn first. Yeah. So you're trading. I mean, you moved, you're content on moving another first. But yeah, it's kind of like Mike's like last dance here. Like, here's your, like, this is, we're going to either win it or go far, or we're going to fail miserably.
People are saying they sold low on Capella. I get that. I mean, I guess they technically got one first, but it was never really theirs. It went right over to the other teams in the trade. But Capella, if you look at all the playoff teams, there just wasn't a market for him. Like, most of the playoff teams have better centers, and there's definitely worries about his health this year. If you're the Celtics or somebody, and you're like, well, I'm not sure this guy can help me for the next 15 games, and then the playoffs are going to be here before we know it. Like, is it worth Daniel Tice and a draft pick and all that? And they concluded it's not.
Well, in Atlanta, it's more about 2020-21 for Capella, right? I mean, like, when are we, you know, especially with him dealing with that heel injury, you'll see Dwayne Dedman probably as their starter now, I would think, with Capella injured. So now you have, like, you've invested, $30 million in those two players, which I'm actually fine with Dedman there. You know, you gave up Len and Jabari Parker, but yeah, I think you hit a good point. Like, he's got value, but when you look at the landscape of the league, it's not value to a playoff team.
I think one of the themes of it's an obvious one, but between what they got for Capella and the whole bunch of nothing that Detroit got for Andre Drummond, I think we've reached a point where the league is valuing centers so lowly that I'm Does that make sense? So lowly? I don't know. Without, they don't, no one is placing a lot of value on centers. And if the Rockets looked at Capella and said, well, look, we don't think our current team is at its best with Capella on the floor. Mike is not going to play him. Let's turn him into someone who's going to play for us. That makes conceptual sense to me. There just wasn't, I mean, Boston, look how easily these teams got Andre Drummond. I mean, the Cleveland got Andre Drummond for literally John Henson, Brandon Knight in a second round pick. That's nothing.
Well, I mean, not, I mean, in a second round pick is, I think it's the Warriors second in 2022 or 23. And that's going to be probably pretty decent. So,
TBD.
Yeah, that's true. But yeah, I mean, Drummond's a fascinating case because, like, when was the last time a guy, not this year All-Star, but on an expiring contract, got a second round in cap filler, right?
And Detroit's going to get hammered for this.
Yep.
Hammered. But you know what? They didn't want him on their team.
Well, that's the thing. Like, they got nervous that we started to see this market shrinking, right? The market of Memphis didn't have cap space, went out the window. Atlanta doesn't need a center. New York's got new owners or management there. I mean, we don't know if Andre Drummond is a Leon Rose guy. I don't think that's going to be your first big signing, right? Go in there and like give him 4 years, $150 million in New York.
The Knicks fans just vomited. As you're saying that, they just vomited.
So if you're Detroit, what happens if he opts in? Then you've got you got him for the year, or maybe you can try to flip him in another deal. So you kind of cut your bait. You get a second round pick. You've got $35-36 million in room to go out and get a starting point guard. Is it Fred VanVleet, a Dwayne Casey favorite? And then you kind of patch up your rest of your roster, or you just wait and just kind of, I mean, I think, Zach, the reality is that like Detroit is like full rebuild.
Well, this and the Kennard rumors that they were willing to trade Kennard for a good draft pick, not a crappy one, mm-hmm. a good draft pick. That's why they didn't get the deal done, because they're probably haggling with Phoenix over, as Woj reported, over how heavily protected or lightly protected that pick is going to be. But it does signal, like, if you don't think Luke Kennard is a cinch to be part of your next good Detroit Pistons team, I mean, he's, what is he, 22, 23?
Yeah.
It's his third year in the league. And you think whoever you pick with this 2020 draft pick is, like, you're a ways away.
Yeah.
A ways away.
Yeah, I mean, I had, when I wrote about Detroit and kind of place putting tags to each guy, like, I mean, Kennard wasn't untouchable, but it was kind of, like, off the board for me, right? Like, Like he's one of your found, and I know you inherited him from the prior front office, but like he's like one of your foundation pieces, right? Like if you're gonna, start building around guys, him and Sekou Doumbouya. Like,
oh, Bobby, I wrote about he was in my six most intriguing players of the year column before the season, and they were talking about him like, he could be. They would say, well, okay, not like this, not like this, really. But the feel, the ball handling, the leftiness, the coming off the bench, there's like a whiff of Manu Ginobili. Whoa. But like he was among the most important players on their team because they just don't have a lot of young talent. And he's skilled. He's really skilled. And well, he's still on the team. So.
Well, yeah. I mean, and you look at their three highest paid players, right? Blake, Andre Drummond, and Reggie Jackson. You got a second round pick at the end of the day. So it feels like Kennard is basically kind of the sacrificial lamb for past mistakes, right? I mean, that's kind of.
Yeah, Drummond. And look, I've been hard on Drummond before on this podcast. I don't think there's a lot of evidence he's a winning NBA player despite his numbers. But he's not unproductive. Like Reggie Jackson's just not very good and is a dog on defense and is just not very good. Drummond at least gives you something. But yeah, I mean, I don't mind Cleveland doing that. The team that I'm surprised didn't get in on Drummond is Charlotte. I thought, they're splitting these center minutes between Zeller and Biombo and Hernan Gomez. And they just seem like a team? I mean, Charlotte and Detroit are just sort of walking the same path as like these NBA, like they're sort of the most depressing NBA situations right now. And I just thought Charlotte would look at Drummond and say, okay, we can plug him in 35 minutes a game, Rozier, Graham, boom, boom. We can chase the eighth seed next year. Nothing. I heard nothing.
Well, and too, like the analogy I used with Cleveland was like, and I know our friend Tim McMahon came back at me and made a joke out of it. It was like, it's like leasing a car, right? 3 months, lease a car, figure out if you want to buy it long term or you want to give it back. And like Charlotte's it's a great case because like, you know, they're one of the five or six teams that has room, but like, what are you getting? Right. So if you get Drummond, you have him for the rest of the season. You figure out maybe it's a long term deal. They're still going to have
by the way, Batum contract is 25 or 20. What is he? 26? Let me look it up.
Yeah, I mean, all those Batum's going to come off the books in 21. Like, you got to start somewhere, right?
When I Drummond is 26. Someone threw at me when I was talking to people about Charlotte's potential fit. So I don't know. He lines up with their timeline. Like, timeline for what? Like, how old is Terry Rozier? 25?
Yeah.
You just spent $18 million a year on Terry Rozier. That timeline matches up. Now, I understand Bridges and Washington, two players I really like, are much younger than that. But, like, timeline, what timeline? Timeline where? I didn't understand. And Boston is going to get beat up for not going to get Drummond at this price, but there was no way for them to get Drummond without putting Marcus Smart in the deal, at least, and atop other salaries.
Oh, yeah.
Marcus Smart is better than Andre Drummond, period, end of sentence. I don't care about fit, talent, playoffs, fit, blah, 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 but he's just a better player.
Yeah, they didn't have – they're top heavy in salary. I mean, Brown – you know, you're not moving any of your core guys, you know, and then it's basically Smart and then have that build up to a deal to get within, or it's going to be, you know, Gordon Hayward, which, you know, they weren't doing. So, yeah, I mean, I think teams will get beat up, Zach, just because what the price turned out to be. Right. So if you were going back to Charlotte, like you could have done it if it was Marcus, Marvin Williams and Bismack Biyombo in a second, right? Like that's
obviously.
What it is. Yeah. That's
Thrown in a pair of Jordan sweatpants or something and gotten it done.
I mean, that's what the asking price was.
Cleveland was the other team that I was asking people. I had heard Cleveland like Drummond. Tristan's expiring. Nance is a hybrid. Big, you know, I just thought, and people will say, well, the timeline thing exists for them too. Like, he's 6 years older than Sexton and Garland, and Cleveland has another high draft pick coming. Yes, they should just tank, I guess, but that's a tough market to tank in. And if you tread water, no, I don't know what is going to happen with Kevin Love. I think Kevin Love and Andre Drummond have the same agent. I don't think that has any bearing on Kevin Love's desire to get the hell out of Cleveland. I think I would still expect them to try to move Kevin Love in the offseason. So he leaves. You just tread water for a little while. See what you have. I don't see much harm in that. Give the guards a nice pick and roll lob threat to play with. Whatever.
Well, you know what? I think the interesting thing is, in the next couple of weeks is kind of what happens to Tristan Thompson, right? That's going to be he would be. And I don't think they go down the route of, and certainly his agent, Rich Paul, you know, the buyout route. I mean, you'd have a little bit of a bidding war, right? If he ever became on the free agent market for a big to use in the playoffs here. I don't think that's probably not going to be the case here, but now you've got Drummond, you got Thompson, and Love. Those are your three bigs.
It's a lot of money involved in those guys. You know, I don't mind the Drummond thing. I want to go back to Houston for just a second because I think what they've done is fascinating. On my podcast on Monday with Windhorst, I called Robert Covington one of the most overrated players in the league.
You know what, real quick? So Kevin Pelton did a thing like big questions and overrated, underrated, who are the things?
So
I wrote Robert Covington. This is before the trade. Robert Covington, blah, 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 did my thing. And I scrolled up. And KP had underrated. And I was like, I started to second guess myself. I was like, you know, it's like when you think you have the right answer and you start second guessing yourself.
I got a lot of calls from guys around the league about that. Some agreed and some disagreed. Here, let me just clarify this. I think Robert Covington's good. I don't think he's a bad player. I think he's like Trevor Ariza or Danny Green, like a good winning player who, by the way, in Houston is going to be in the absolute perfect role. His shots are going to be, they're going to go from semi-contested to not contested at all. He's not going to have to dribble once in a game if he doesn't want to. And he's going to fly around on defense. Like, I think he's a good player. It just reminds me of the discourse around Covington. He's become like a little bit of a fetish among some of the analytics oriented people. It reminds me a little bit of when, Kyrie got traded to Boston, and there was all of this, wow, Jay Crowder led the league and adjusted plus minus. He's the crown jewel of this trade. I'm like, Jay Crowder's fine. He's fine. Can we just chill out a little bit? And so, like, I think Robert Covington is a good player. I just think the discourse around him, it's as if he is a secret star. And I don't think that's the case.
And you know what I think a lot of it has to do with, Zach, is his contract.
He has a great contract.
I think that's what, like,
that's undeniable.
That's kind of like the secret sauce, right? You see that number, like, it's basically a little north of the mid-level, and you're like, whoa, this guy's got good value. And I'm not saying he doesn't. You know, the one thing that, you know, he's been in some situations here, and I get it, in Minnesota and in Philadelphia, where they were, you know, terrible with, you know, during the process. The 10 playoff games he played in, we're not good.
He got benched.
Yeah, 31%, I think he shot from the field.
The Sixers benched him against Boston in favor of TJ McConnell because Jason Tatum was eating his lunch. Like, he's not a great one-on-one defender. He's a great team defender. I don't necessarily think that. I think that playoff series is interesting that he played so poorly. Houston is the perfect spot for him because other than, like, the first 10 days when he got to Minnesota or 20 games or something, he's not going to make a bad team any better, but he can take the shots he's going to get from Harden and Westbrook and do some stuff with them and fly around on defense and get deflections and all that. I didn't mean to disparage Robert Covington. I just think he's overrated. That's all. I think he's a good play. The prime Trevor Ariza. I just don't think people talked about prime Trevor Ariza like this. I don't know. Can we talk about the Heat?
Oh goodness. What do they do down there? Like what? One day I'm gonna have to go over there.
What do they do?
Well, one day I'm gonna have to go over there and drive across Alligator Alley and spend a day with Andy.
Bring
and,
your
and
pads,
Pat,
Bobby,
and just figure out like do they have like these Jedi mind tricks on like teams as far as extracting value?
You're saying they won the Miami Memphis trade?
I'm saying that to get off Deion Waiters and James Johnson's contracts and not have to give up any young players like Kendrick Nunn or Bam, you know. And yes, I know Justice Winslow, you know, we know his value when he's healthy. I mean, he's not healthy. He's never healthy. They want it just from that regard, right? Like we can talk about Iguodala and what he can do. And as far as Iguodala, Crowder, I'm not really worried about Solomon Hill. But just to be able to get off the Waiters contract without really attaching a first round pick, unless you consider Justice Winslow a first round pick, is pretty remarkable there.
I really wish they got Gallinari.
I would have been. You never see those, you know, you never see those type of moves where you get like two impact players like that with 30 games left. With, you know, like in like, that was like Pat Riley saying, you know what? This is our window here, man. Like, here we go. Like, I wrote about like, what's the one move I want to see? And I was like, I want him to go all in on Drew Holiday, right? Like, here we go. Like, this is what we got. I don't care. Like, I got to try Tyler Hero. Like, this is what, you know, like kind of just throw it all in here. Who knows when we're ever going to be back? You know, like we'll be good, but this might be our opportunity.
Gallo was my guy. And if you go back and read my 10 things column, maybe 3 weeks ago, one of the items was the Heat are one player away. And I discussed Drew Holiday and I said, you know, the more I watch the Heat play, the more I think what they really need is a stretch four who can play a little defense and just sort of lock in, cinch up those Bam at center lineups with no Myers Leonard or Kelly Olynyk, no second like big man. Because I just didn't think they had anyone that resembled that unless Winslow is going to get healthy and shoot. And I named Gallinari. Gallinari was my guy. I really wanted them to get Gallinari. Also, by the way, to everyone in Oklahoma City, I wanted Oklahoma City to buy at this trade deadline. I don't mind that they kept Gallinari at all. You can go read my writing on that. I wanted them to go get a wing to start and like really give teams a run. But I really wanted to get Heat to get Gallinari. If you throw a closing lineup out there of Dragic, Butler, Iguodala, Gallo, Bam. Or just, you know, if you need a little more shooting, out goes Dragic, in comes Duncan Robinson. Out goes Iguodala, in comes Tyler Hero, whatever, who's ever rolling. That's a lineup that can win the East. You can get to the finals with that group. Crowder is like Walmart Gallinari. He's a 30% three-point shooter who, on like wide-ass open looks, who is a little smaller, plays a little smaller, doesn't handle it as well, doesn't get to the line. Defensively, I guess he's a little feistier, but he's a little smaller. I just think the Heat to me are better today. We'll see how Andre plays. I just don't think they got special. And I think if they had gotten Gallinari, they could have got special.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, when you saw both those names there, I think it, for Miami's sake, I think it was hard for them to take the protection off 2023.
So just to be clear, they owe the Thunder a 2023 first-round pick that is lottery protected and rolls over several years, long enough that they literally could not trade them a second first-round pick. Had they unprotected it, they could have then traded a 2025 or 2026 yeah. first-round pick yeah. to sweeten the
pot. That's right. That's what would have probably happened, because you would have had Oklahoma City taking back probably a combination of, you know, that Waiters, Johnson, you know, some of that money there. Protection off the pick in 23 would have been lifted, and then you can add another pick there. And without him agreeing to an extension and basically being a rental, it was too rich, you know, too rich for them. I think it would be amazing, Zach, if we ever got to a point where we didn't have the 7-year rule, right? Can you imagine if you can just trade out?
Trade a 20, 35 first round pick.
Keep on going, right? That, and if you don't, you know, the stepping rule, we can't trade back to back picks, right? Can you imagine if we just like the wild, wild west when it comes to draft picks?
I can imagine that the league does not want, teams to be in prison, of their own making, in a cell of their own making. So I am still, again, we started recording this 40 minutes ago, 50 minutes after the deadline. I still need to figure out exactly why Gallinari to Miami didn't happen. Or Gallinari from Oklahoma City to Miami didn't happen. Maybe it's the extension and they couldn't agree on an extension. That certainly was part of it. My question, and to me the question that remains unanswered as we record this, is, was Oklahoma City asking for and or going to get Nunn or Robinson? And that would have really changed. If the Heat could have come out of this with Gallinari and Iguodala and kept all of Hero, who I think was not in any of these
right.
talks,
he wasn't.
Nunn and Robinson, and you lose Winslow, that to me is, you've thread the needle of, we've gone all in, but we've kept enough young stuff, Derrick Jones Jr., all that. That's what's unclear to me. Was Oklahoma City really just not going to get any of those guys? Was it all going to be draft compensation?
It was, yeah. I mean, I've, you know, talking to people that, you know, when it was reported Wednesday night, the first thing I thought was Kendrick Nunn, right? And then you start making calls and like, no, Kendrick Nunn's not part of the deal.
I heard nothing about players.
No.
I heard, now, again, I haven't made enough calls and talked to enough people yet that I'm 100% confident in that. But I haven't heard anything about players.
Well, and the crazy part about this deal, too, is that usually you get a lot leaked out, and you start calling people and, like, say, hey, like, you know, like, where's Solomon Hill going? And they'd be like, I know he's getting traded, but, no, you know, they won't tell us where he's going, right? Like, you didn't know kind of where guys were going to wind up. It would have probably made it a little bit easier. But it is interesting, though, because I think, you know, Miami is committed to keeping that cap ledger pretty open in 21. And if, you know, you saw Iguodala do the extension with a team option there.
Andre, what a legend.
Oh,
Andre,
what a
is.
Life, right? Isn't it getting better than that?
Well, you know what? Andre understood his leverage.
Yeah.
Andre understood. Andre Iguodala was not going to go to the Miami Heat. He wanted to stay. My best intel is he wanted to stay in California. He wanted to play for the LA teams. The Heat wanted him. Memphis wanted to trade him to the Heat.
Yep.
Enter Andre Iguodala. You know what the best leverage in the world is? When you are actually willing to walk away. And he's getting paid no matter what.
Yep.
And when you're actually willing to walk away, hey, no thanks, Pat.
Yeah.
I don't care about the rings on the table. I don't care about the slick back hair and the Armani suits and Heat culture hashtag, all this. I don't care about the Miami Vice jerseys. They're cool, whatever. I'm walking away. Unless 2 years, $30 million.
No, you're right.
That's leverage.
No, it is leverage. I mean, I think, you know, just circling back to Gallinari, I think, it'll, you know, he's in Oklahoma City, finished there. Like, what's the market, right? What's going to be the market for him now? Come, if you turned down or if you were thinking about extending, and I understand he's, what is he, 31?
31.
This is probably his last big contract here. And to keep your options open, unless you're going to get, you know, 2 years guaranteed here. So I get it from that point, but it is kind of interesting that Miami was trying to go all in. right, were willing to do the draft picks, probably, and wouldn't guarantee, you know, if that's what the holdup was, wouldn't guarantee 21-22 over cap space.
Like I said, I'm wondering something about it that mostly adds up. Like, it's not always easy to get off money when you need to get off money, and the whole league knows you need to get off money.
Yeah.
That said, the one thing I know about the Heat and their GM, Andy Ellisberg, one of the more creative cap guys in the league, like, when they want something to happen, you can throw all the obstacles at them. Oh, there's a hard cap. They've got to throw this much money out. They don't have picks, this and that. Somehow, some way, he doesn't sleep for 3 days, and all this shit happens, and they get everything, and they accomplish what they want. I just feel like if that was really the holdup, they would say their DNA is, we'll figure it out.
Yeah.
We'll figure it out in the summer of 2021. We have to stretch him. We have to stretch him. We have to pay a first-round pick to dump him. We'll pay a first-round pick to dump him. Something, it adds up 90% of the way. I'm just surprised that that alone would be the barrier to them getting Danilo Gallinari and making a real, true, honest run at the Bucks, the Lakers, and the Clippers.
Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, that part doesn't add up.
Not that they can't now, because right. I think they're really, really good.
Yep.
I just, Andre and Crowder together, I'm just not sure it makes like that much of a difference. There's still like you throw those Bam at center lineups on the floor that I talked about. They're just now they're a little smaller and they are a little light on shooting. I feel like they're better, but I don't think they're like better.
They're not Milwaukee better. They're you know, I don't know if anyone is at Milwaukee better, but I think if you got Iguodala, I mean, if you got Gallinari, it certainly gives you the separation from 2 to 6, right? I mean, I think everyone's
I think if they had gotten Gallinari, to me, they would have walked into the playoffs as the best team out of Boston, Toronto, yeah. Philadelphia, Indiana, Miami, which is a hell of a fivesome.
Yeah.
That's a hell of a fivesome. Indiana's having some, you know, growing pains reintegrating Oladipo. Philly is like, just Philly's always angsty. There's a lot of angst. It's like a lot of angst and bodies clanging into each other and just the angst. Brett Brown's accent and just a lot of angst. And Toronto just sails right along. They didn't do anything either.
No, that was our team. That was our team of the summer. We saw, right? Sellers, and then you go out and win 12 or 13 in a row. And
boy, they're good.
They are good.
When they start pressing teams, I watched the end of that Indiana game last night. They start throwing the full court press to people, and these teams just melt into puddles. Yeah. They don't know what the hell. I wanted Toronto to buy. I think they would have. I think they looked around and didn't find a target. Because you look around, okay, who fits? Well, Holiday's going to cost a lot. Bogdanovich is a free agent. We got to be careful with our cap space. And he's going to get paid a lot of money. Did you hear word one about Evan Fournier?
No. And that was my guy when, I think I wrote about him in December when I was out in Vegas. It was like everybody was talking about, like, said, you know, who's the one guy you think is getting moving? It was like Fournier. Like, he would be like the guy because of, you know, the player option, having a really good year. And it's going to cost Orlando, but no, I did not hear his name at all.
He would have been an interesting fit in Toronto. He's shooting 40% from three, 38% for his career. You know, you look at their team, and I wonder if they, who knows if he was available? I have no idea. Orlando is like, Orlando is now in a position where Fournier is 28 or 27. They're in this position with him where they're either going to lose him for nothing or pay him a lot of money, and I don't think either of those alternatives are, like, super exciting for them. Maybe he was never available, though. I wonder if Toronto looked at him and just thought, what has he proven, really?
Yeah.
Look how tough we are. Look how physical and tough. Look how, like, has he proven he can, like, that he has our DNA? Like, he has the DNA of this team? Yeah, he can shoot better than OG Anunoby. Yeah, he can shoot better than Norman Powell. Why does he only average 2.5 assists a game? Is he as tough as those guys? Can he survive defensively when we really need it? Like, I just wonder if they looked at it. And maybe they didn't look at him at all. I'm just speculating.
Well, you know, and it takes us back to, like, before the season. I remember when, during training camp, like, you had signed Stanley Johnson and Rondae Hollis-Jefferson. And I think after a practice, Nick Nurse, they asked him about him. And they're like, they basically said, like, these guys don't get it, right? Like, they're like, they don't get what we were committed to. Rondé's played, I think Rondé's got a, you know, certainly has a role there, but it's like, you have to be, you have to have a, yeah, you're right, a special kind of DNA, to fit there in Toronto.
What do you think of Marcus Morris to the Clippers and not to the Lakers?
Well, I always thought the Lakers were going to be hard just because unless you were going to trade Danny Green, right, and or Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, how do you kind of stack the contracts? And if you're not going to include Kyle Kuzma and you don't have a first-round pick, like what are you actually sending out, right? Like nothing of substance here. So for the Clippers, you know, it gives you, you know, another scorer, certainly. You know, you swap him and Harkless, cost you first, and you prevent him from getting to the Lakers, right? I mean, wasn't that the goal all along, right? To kind of, you know.
This was the single, to the point that I feel like I've been talking and writing about it, as we all have, for 4 months. This is the single most obvious trade in the NBA. Yeah. And it took until, I don't know, 40 minutes before the buzzer or whatever, for it to happen. I just didn't think there was any way. It would have been interesting to see if the Knicks don't fire Steve Mills, what happens.
That would have been interesting.
That's the one wild card. Were they really just hell-bent, which all the intel was, they're keeping him, they're keeping him, they're keeping him, they're keeping him. And then, bam, everything flipped when he got fired or not retained or shifted to the board or whatever the hell happens when people don't have the same job anymore at MSG.
You collect a big paycheck and you don't make many decisions. How's that sound?
I'll do that. By the way, do you know how? Maybe I shouldn't tell this story, but I will. On the car ride up here, I was calling people the whole time. We're in Bristol now. And three different people fell for it when I said, hey, I just want to tell you guys, I have some big news. You got to keep this under your hat. I'm like, what? These are people that work for teams. I said, you know, the Knicks reached out to me. They want to bring me in for an interview. Every time. Oh, my God. Congratulations. Like, that's not true.
But that's the thing, right?
One guy even texted me out of the blue. I texted another source out of the blue, hey, you hearing anything? And he texted back, hey, I heard you're interviewing for the Knicks job. And I said, I texted back, well, it's funny you say that. And he texted back, holy shit, really? I'm like, no, people. Anything is possible with the Knicks. This was the most obvious trade on the board. It just gives another shooter, another guy who can bang with Bron, switch on to Anthony Davis if need be. I picked the Clippers to make the finals before the season. I picked the Clippers to win the championship before the season. I'm still picking them to make the finals now. I think this makes them better. I think this makes them meaningfully better.
I agree. I mean, it gives you a really nice insurance policy, and it didn't really, you know, Harkless started, I think, 36, 37 games. But the cost of, you know, this was, as you've written about it, like this was basically your last chance to move a first, right? Like this was it because of what's going out. So, you know, this was kind of their opportunity to upgrade. And the other thing too is that you have non-bird rights on him because he's only on a 1 year deal but he makes so much. He's at 15. I mean, you can still pay him up to $18 million as a free agent. So you do have that window there. You know, who knows what happened with some of their own guys, but,
And they got him without sacrificing. I mean, they traded Jerome Robinson to Washington as part of this deal to make it work, but they didn't give up as many things in addition to Harkless and the pick as people thought they might.
No, and I was talking to someone close to the Knicks, and like it felt like that was the floor as far as, you know, worst case scenario, we get a first round pick, but it was like, you know, we didn't get a young player out of it, right? We got a young first and a Detroit second, but there wasn't anything, you know, on the court that we can kind of show for it.
And as far as the Lakers go, I mean, they could have used Marcus Morris. There's no question. I think Kuzma's fine. I think Kuzma, and I understand their reluctance to trade him, is really one of the only young players they still have on the team. I just, you know, Denver didn't make a big win now move. Utah made its move with Clarkson and is flailing around a little bit right now. Lost to the Undermanned Nuggets last night. We'll see, but the Clippers made the biggest buy of the Western Conference contenders, I think, and that's a big deal. Before we go, any trade that surprised you? Any other little trade? I remember a year ago I asked you what was the trade that really surprised you or what was notable to you, and you complimented the Clippers for getting JaMychal Green and Avery Bradley for Garrett Temple, I think, right?
Yeah,
and also the Zubats Muscala one.
Yeah,
anything like that this year?
I do. I like Jordan McRae going to Denver.
Woo!
For Shabazz Napier.
I like it.
Because it was a position of need, right? Napier, what's Napier going to do for you with, especially with Jamal Murray and Monty Morris and McCray had, you know, he'd gotten hurt in Washington, but he gives you a big wing to kind of come off your bench now. It's one of those under the radar type deals. So I like, that's kind of my big no name trade that, you know, we'll see. That's like when you're watching the players, like, where'd Jordan McCray come from? So that's my deal.
It gives him a little bit of like, he's been in like score first, score always mode with Washington. I guess everyone's in that mode with Washington this season, but he gives them a little bit of just break in case of emergency. Like, we need some points. Let's see what the hell happens. Roll this guy out there. And like you said, Napier with Morris and Murray there was not going to have much of a role. That's an interesting one. I'm looking up and down the standings now, you know, to see what happens. Sacramento, nothing. Phoenix, nothing. I don't get the Oubre noise that came out. I don't know why Phoenix would have really been interested. New Orleans, nothing. Spurs, nothing. Portland, nothing. Dallas. Dallas sniffed around.
Well, because you had the right things to do a deal, right? Like Courtney Lee.
Courtney Lee in 2 seconds never got traded anywhere.
That Golden State second, right? Which was basically an extension of round one.
Dallas sniffed around some pretty at least one big name and did not get anywhere. It was too close to the buzzer. That's Atlanta got a bunch of centers. Chicago, the words Chicago and Bulls were not said.
No.
Today.
Nope.
By anyone.
Nope.
Well, another trade deadline is in the books. Any closing thoughts on the D'Lo Wiggins thing that we didn't hit?
No.
That's
I mean,
the big one. That's,
you know,
the headliner.
It's the rare max for max, right? I mean, I think Wiggins teased us in the beginning. I mean, I was saying, like, can a max guy get most improved, right? I mean, that's kind of saying a lot.
He can get most stagnated. That should be the opposite of most improved. Just, well, that's like, but most consistent, like CJ McCollum is consistent. If you look at CJ McCollum's numbers, they're like the same every single year, but he's good. Like, there should be a most stagnant award.
You know, it's funny, like, with real quick with Wiggins, like if you have somebody who doesn't watch the league and you just go by just, you know, the old school stats, right? But this guy's good. 23 points, right? 44% from the field. But he is the poster boy that you got to watch these games.
You know who lost the Jimmy Butler trade? The Chicago-Minnesota Jimmy Butler trade? Everybody.
Yeah.
Everybody lost.
Yeah. Everyone. Even Lauri Markkanen.
Everyone lost.
Yeah.
The Bulls are going to look back at that as a fork in the road moment. Now, again, it's early. Markkanen's been injured.
Yeah.
LaVine is rising.
Chris Dunn has had a good moment.
Dunn can defend.
Yeah.
Dunn is in your jersey. Butler, you know, then he leaves Minnesota,
yeah,
and they get, you know, Saric and Covington. They spin those things into other things, whatever. Chicago had a moment where they could have kept Butler and kept Mirotić and had cap space and had all their picks. And I remember writing at the time, I don't know which of these scenarios is going to present them the most championship equity over the next 7 years.
Yeah,
it's possible they're the same. But that other one that they punted on, there was a level of certainty to that. And it's possible both of those versions of the team top out at 52 yeah. wins and don't go anywhere. But that other version could have been really, really good. And they just didn't want any part of Jimmy Butler.
No.
Didn't want any part of him and traded him for some stuff. And here we are. They stink and they're going nowhere.
Yep.
And they did nothing at the trade deadline. All right. Bobby Marks has been tireless. Well, not tireless. You are tired.
I am tired.
You're working tirelessly.
I am tired, but we made it through.
We made it through, and the trade deadline is over. All-Star is right around the corner, and on behalf of everyone at ESPN, including our viewers, thank you for all your analysis and your cap clarifications and your instant tweets and all that. We couldn't do it without you.
I appreciate it. This is always – now, you know, this is the hard part now. Then you go and, like, detox for, like 3 weeks of, like, what do we do now? I start working – now, you know what I start doing?
Summer.
Summer of 2020.
Summer 2020, baby. Yeah. Well, we'll reconvene again after the draft, maybe like we did last year, and set that up. But Bobby Marks, everybody, thanks for coming on.
Thanks, Aaron.
The Low Post is presented by Goodyear. Discover the possibilities. Goodyear, more driven.